Welcome to the Julie Chan Show, where passion meets purpose. Today, we are here with author Ray Studevant, and he has had quite an extraordinary life growing up as a Black and white man and trying to understand himself, his race, all of the ups and downs of life and everyone else around him also. Ray, so good to be with you today. You have had quite the extraordinary life. You have overcome so much, had to find the joys through all of the chaos in life. Talk about who your mother and father were and who you learned you were.
Well, I mean, it's a mid-60s, biological father, Black man, kind of a Terrence Howard type complexion, ends up, he was on the streets at 12. My mother was on the streets at 12. She was white. He was Black, mid-60s. Interracial relationship, marriages were certainly, had not been, were not legal at that time, actually, in the mid-60s. I think there was, they were legalized nationally, I think, in 67. So I ended up being born. He was a raging alcoholic. She was a heroin addict. So I was basically orphaned. Bounced around house to house, whatever, foster home, what have you. And in comes the Lamell Studevant, my aunt, who was a Black woman from Mississippi, who her and my uncle, they, you know, my aunt in particular, you know, she grew up during the Jim Crow era in the 30s and 40s, because she was actually my great aunt, had a lot of problems with white people at that time, in particular, white men with blue eyes. She had been sort of traumatized by that. And there she was forced to make a decision. Once her husband died, he died once they were, you know, they had, would take care of me sometimes. She had to decide as a Southern Black woman in Washington, D.C., do I adopt this blue-eyed rascal who reminds me of everything that I didn't like and traumatized me? And yet I have to remind him that he's Black along the way in the blackest city in America, on the blackest side of town, in the blackest of neighborhoods. So therein lies the story, pretty much. And it was a journey that it was quite interesting, to say the least. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So and she decided to take you in, mm-hmm. to love you, to raise you. What did you learn from that experience with her? What, you know, as looking back now, what were some of the biggest lessons?
Well, her lesson was summed up with NBC. She said, you know, you should always watch channel NBC. I don't care what show it's on. And she said, that should be the acronym for your life. I said, what do you mean? She says, nobody cares. NBC. Everybody's got a sad story. I grew up in a shack in Mississippi. I made it out. And her family all did. And they were really successful. So she, even though it was a traumatic story, yeah, abandoned by your parents, dealing with a Black and white issue, your birth certificate says you're Black, you look white. She just didn't want any excuse. She didn't want me to use. But then she also taught me that you better work hard, because don't think that blue eyes and white skin, that you're better than us. She'd always show me my birth certificate. It said you a Negro. Don't think you're better than us. And so we had a funny relationship, because I would kind of talk like a slave around the house just because it was funny. But she said that your complexion, that straight hair might get you in the room, but it won't keep you in the room unless you're educated, unless you really understand what you're talking about and you're competent and you're prepared for the task at hand. So she raised me, and, you know, and I had two sisters who, they weren't mixed. They were Black. So they were my cousins, but we, you know, she took me in and they became my sisters, and they were, you're talking Howard University, Black, afros, bigoted. You couldn't even get them on the screen right now. And it was during the, you know, it was right after the Martin Luther King assassination, the Black and Proud kind of movement, Black Panther and all of that. So it was interesting, but there was a, it was a love story, actually, because you had a Black woman who had dealt with racism from whites. But then you had her son, who who was white dealing with racism from blacks in the neighborhood. So what she endured, obviously they weren't burning crosses in the neighborhood, but you know, it was a very difficult time, but no excuses. That was her approach. Mm-hmm.
I love that. That nobody cares line really is a great reminder that let go of the victim story, right? You got to go live life. You don't need to tell stories. You don't need to wallow in your sorrows. We all have something going on is really what all of this is about, right? Whether you're black or white or whatever, it's something's happening. And it may not even be race related, but you're going through your own war, so to speak. So don't worry about it. And nobody cares because everyone's going through something.
That's right. Exactly. Make it happen. Because, you know, she said it was three types of people. People that watch things happen, people that make things happen, and people that don't know what's happening. You better decide what you're going to be in life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She didn't mess around.
I love that. What a powerful woman to be brought up by and to learn such important lessons. And so as you went on in life, before you wrote this book, tell us about your journey and how you found your own passion and purpose.
Well, I think that the foundation was laid early, that it have a focus, you know, don't lose yourself. Comedy, you know, don't take it all too serious. Take life serious, but enjoy the ride, enjoy the journey, you know. And I think comedy, I'll give you an example because I'm gonna set the table with this. This is what really carried me to not allow circumstances and trials and tribulations later in life to overwhelm me was, I'll give you an example. You know, she had a line. One time, I'm gonna give you two examples of who this woman was and how she helped me to see light. A white man asked her one time, how is that your son? And she says, well, sir, with all due respect, let me ask you a question. You like Star Wars? I said, yeah. You know, Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father. Now, that black Darth Vader can be Luke Skywalker's father. How come I can't be his mother? Now he says, ma'am, with all due respect, you know, it's not Dark Vader, it's Darth with a TH. And she says, oh, excuse me, with more due respect, I said dark on purpose because even in Hollywood, you guys have a black man being a deadbeat dad. He comes back in Luke Skywalker's life and says, Luke, I'm your daddy. Remember when he comes back and he had been gone out of his life, but that was her brilliance where she, you know, made fun of that. Yeah. And remember, she liked George Lucas because he was married to a black woman, but that was years later. But anyway, she told me, she said, look for the humor in the book. You may have read this part where she says, man, white man asked her, says, hey, I don't believe that's your son. It's absolutely no way. And she didn't owe him an explanation. Again, can I ask you a question? If a brown cow can eat green grass and give off white milk, how come a brown woman can't eat collard greens and give off a white son? I'm just saying, sir. And it was that.
This was so quick.
I mean, but the brilliance of her was not to be a smart aleck.
Right.
But just be a thinker. Just think this thing through. Laugh at yourself. Be self-deprecating. Don't be, you know, allow people to run you over. But don't take yourself too serious, boy. Love yourself. Love others. And so and I think that she was a giver. You know, she gave everything she could in raising me. And she always taught us, you will get much more out of life in giving than looking to receive. So look for opportunities to give to people, to help folks. It'll give you a sense of pride and self-respect. And so the main thing she really wanted was to be a decent person. I don't care if you're a trash man or the president of, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, whatever. Just be decent. Be a good person. Be all right. you know, and that was, and so it helped me moving forward to cultivate friendships. Didn't wasn't based on race. I lived in going from New York, LA, Miami, San Diego, whatever. I had friends across, and you see, like you mentioned earlier, it did not matter. Everybody's got problems.
Yeah.
You know, so and don't think the black and white issue is going to be a crutch. Everybody's got problems. You, you know, within other races, there's the light and dark issue alone. So it was just so that laid the foundation, comedy. And I kind of wrote that in the book, kind of underlying comedic tone to it. And because she was also a librarian, I wanted to appeal to, like she did, she always wanted the young ones to read. She looked for kids who were in trouble and made them come to the library and read. And, you know, her, she was famous for the, you know, the librarian that's, shh, that's her. And take you outside, ask you, she would say, Julie, you're disturbing my library. What do you like to read? You might say, well, you know, I like to read the American history, whatever. Okay, let's go find you some books. I'm gonna give you one chance. You make another sound, you're out of here. So she encouraged young ones to read. And
she used the library for its purpose. That's not right. Something I always did, but okay.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, it was like the only time that she made me go to libraries when I was in trouble, and that was my punishment to read. And,
right.
And she was silly. She would give me books I had no idea. You don't give a 9 and 10 year old The Diary of Anne Frank, Catcher in the Rye, The Pearl, and I'm like, man, what? You know? But she's like, no, you can do it. Just read it, and then you had to explain the book, and she would sit and listen. You know what?
Did you read all these books that she handed you?
And half of them, they were above, you know, they were my intelligence at 9, 10 years old. But I ended up reading them in high school. But she, again, she just wanted me to realize that, you know, you don't set limitations on yourself. You know, read the book. Yeah, I remember one time she gave me Ivanhoe. I'm like, man, what? The book was like that thick. I'm like, man, I'm like 10. She's like, no, you can read it. Yeah.
That's amazing. And what she did for you there was showed you that you could accomplish anything. You could do anything. There were no limits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, they always put that age range on books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. For that age. And she was like, what? No, you can read words. You can read anything.
That's right. That's right. And don't worry about if you're confused a little bit. I'll help you out if you need it. But, you know, yeah. So she set the bar really high. And I think, you know, all of my sisters had, you know, PhD and others, master's. So they really set the bar. However, unfortunately, the black and white dynamic, it reared its ugly head a little bit later, and it became problematic, and it strained our relationship because it undermined what she was trying to do. But it was, I'd gotten a scholarship and she had helped me, part financial aid, or she had helped me to get to a private school. And that was when the black and white, being exposed to white people for the first time, but there was also educated black elite. And there was a lot of confusion in my mind. Like, because in life there is an element of get in where you fit in.
Right.
And if you can't, then in essence, you have to go along to get along. And that's when you lose yourself. And that's what I found, because I couldn't get in where I could fit in. And that made life a little bit tough. You know, even though she laid that foundation, I lost my way. I think it took me some time. It took me about 5 years to gather and come to my senses. But
and when you did, how did you, though? It took 5 years, but it happened. So how did that happen for you? Because so many people struggle with that. So how do they overcome that?
I think for me, unfortunately, she told me, because I did not go to college. She kind of believed it. I just was so distraught. She said, you're going to end up dead in jail, illegitimate kids, if you have no focus. Well, I got in trouble, went to jail, went to prison. Didn't end up dead, obviously, I'm here. But I ended up with a child. And that was the turning point. Because as an abandoned child, I knew what it felt like. And the saving grace was, okay, I can't have my child looking at me as a loser. And that's when it all turned for me. And that's when her and I, you know, as you, I don't know if you finished the book, but that was because I was looking when you see the front of the book and it talks about redemption. Mm-hmm. See, I disappointed her tremendously. So then, even though I ended up very well off financially, I didn't do it the college route. I didn't do it the old school black way, you know, prove that you could go through and, you know, an elite school. And but nonetheless, although I was very successful, stock market, made money, I didn't do it the way she wanted. And I was searching for her acceptance. But it was when it wasn't the financial success, it was the success as a father. And she said, you know, she didn't agree with religion. I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses. You're like, oh, that's crazy. We were all Baptists. She didn't agree with the way I made money. It wasn't illegal. It was just, I just didn't do it the college route. But when my daughter became a success and we had a great relationship and I was there for my child from day one, that is the beginning of the redemption. She says, okay, I may not agree with your religion, but it's made you a better person. I don't agree with how you made your money, but it's legal. You know, you did well and you were a great father, was really what helped, you know, me to redeem myself with her. I'm not going to give away too much of the book, but that was the turning point for me to say, okay, black, white, whatever, that has nothing to do with this, because I didn't want to be 30, 40, 50 years old worrying about, oh, wow, too white to be black to be white. Man, nobody, like, let all that nonsense go. But it was very difficult because your family was always reminding you you're black, but you're in corporate America and it's a different world. And, you know, you saw racism in corporate America that blew you away. You're like, and I remember the woman that taught me the stock market was she's in the book. I don't know how far you've gone. I'm not going to tell you, but she was an Asian immigrant. And that woman, because she was a female, a minority, she had a chip on her shoulder and she understood, you know, and she just was the one that really took me, you know, to greater heights financially. And when you get to that part, whatever, in the book, it's it's pretty interesting. But Jews, Asians, blacks, whites, Latinos all played a major role. So I just step back and go, man, like, everybody's just like, that means nothing. Like, all that racism.
It's all back to NBC. Nobody cares.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Yep.
We make it a big deal in our heads.
Exactly.
People, you know, have a bigger problem than others and they have to make it about that. And it's their story. Exactly. So raising your daughter, how were you able to instill in her passion and drive and resilience?
I was an absolutely really tough dad because I knew what I had done. I knew the opportunity I had blown. And I remember, I mean, from schoolwork, from day one, I just instilled in her, just rode her. Probably I regret some of that, how hard I was on her. And we just talked last night about that. And I, you know, the other night, and I said, man, I know I rode you hard, but look how it turned out, you know? So there was a payoff in that. And so she turned out to make life a lot easier for me. And I was motivated. Obviously you love your child, but it was because I knew the mistakes I had made. Because opportunity at 18 was right at the door, but I had a meltdown and it took me years later to kind of get right the ship, get back in my lane and keep moving. So, it was also to prove to my mother that, you know, because the same values and principles she laid down in the house from her Southern upbringing and from her love of the church and the Bible, all of those principles, they laid the foundation for me. No nonsense. And I was probably tougher than I should have been. And I do regret that just a little bit.
But she turned out well and she stayed on the straight and narrow path. Is that right?
Yeah. She actually, you know, I really got into the stock market to pay for her college, but she ended up getting a college scholarship in basketball. So that saved me a few.
Congratulations. Huge.
Yeah.
And that's probably also part of the grit and the perseverance that you put in her and the work ethic, right? That she took on basketball and made it her thing and obviously did really well at it to be able to get a scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. She did well. And I think that I go back to it's just, we always hear our parents say, wait until you have kids. And LaMel, you know, my aunt, she instilled in me, she's, you know, I would say the same thing she screamed at me to my own child. And the idea that the quicker you understand, nobody cares, you know, and love yourself, be responsible for your own happiness. And that's where.
How did you teach love yourself?
Well, the thing was, what was interesting about love was that you can't imitate an emotion that you've never seen. So from, you know, they say the first 5 or 6 years are the formative years of your life. So it was difficult to love because I hadn't seen that. You know, my dad was an alcoholic. My father, my mother was a heroin addict. And my aunt was loving in the sense that she took me in, but she was tough. And she wasn't, you know, really most passionate. She was compassionate, but not affectionate. No, I was determined. It's funny you asked me that because I was determined to find love, to love, and of course, like most people, be in love. But the main thing was I'm going to try to just use that decency, just treat people right, just treat people right, love folks. And see what happens, you know. And it saved me a lot, but it took me some years to do that because people drive you crazy. You know that they disappoint all the time. But I disappointed people as well. But Pete, your best friends will disappoint you, and you go. And I know for you girls, it's even worse. It's hard for girls to keep tight girlfriends because guys, we get along, but girls.
Right. Women love the competitive or have the competitive edge for sure. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then there's always the expectation, right? We all have a different perception of love, what we want out of love, what we want from another person. So much expectation can let us down easily.
Yep, exactly. And I just, when I think about the book and I thought about, I went to the cabin in the mountains of California and I wrote it. And I remember thinking, okay, we'll see what happens. Now this thing's nominated for a Pulitzer, which is crazy, you know. And I thought, but it was based in love. It's based in love. I thought because I wanted, it was because she had just died. My mother had just died when I wrote it. So I
was that the seed to write it? Was that the reason that you were pushed to write it?
That was part of it because it was therapeutic for me. Mm. But it was closure, and the book was dedicated and to her, and the first copy was to be placed on her tombstone at Arlington National Cemetery. And it was because I didn't feel like because she got Alzheimer's, she couldn't remember who I was in essence. I mean, so that was a heartbreaker. So what happened was I felt like I didn't get to say what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Because it was slow death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was, I got a chance to, for a little redemption, some closure, some therapy, and, you know, kind of feel like, you know what, I dedicated this book to her and I felt like, you know, I gave her a voice because being from Mississippi, a lot of times people think it's about racism, but for her, it was more about the stereotype of being a Black person from Mississippi, being backwoods, ignorant, uneducated Negro, but she was far from that. And I thought, you know what? Let me give her the voice that she truly was.
Yeah, right. What did you learn in writing the book that you hadn't known when you started out?
That what I thought was love was not truly love. The sacrifices that you think as a child. When I started to think about what she had done for me, when I started to rewind the tape, One story. I hadn't been circumcised. And I couldn't pee straight. And she kept yelling at me about peeing straight. Like, why is pee going all over the toilet? When I was 4 or 5 years old. And though she was tough, when she realized I wasn't circumcised, she gave me a hug and she felt so bad for me. And I thought, on the surface, when you think about the teenage years, when they're riding, you come home at 11, you're thinking about that. But then for me, rewinding the tape of the moments that you bond with people, they meant a lot to me. And this book helped me to see that her love was much deeper than, her love for me was much deeper than I thought. Yes, and and that really, really, I mean, it left me a lot of mixed emotions. Like, wow, I feel even worse now, you know? So, yeah, but that was it. When you really, and I think it's good to rewind the tape in your life and think for a second, like, wow, the good times that you shared with someone.
Right.
You know, really
good. And what they were really saying, but you just couldn't see it at the time, right?
That's right.
Because you mentioned earlier that she didn't show affection. And as a young child, you're looking for that external affection. But what you learned through writing the book was that it was so much deeper. So beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And she, and one day I remember probably one of the seminal moments we had was years later, she said to me, she said, you know, I never wanted you to play the Joker. And the Joker in the deck of cards is the card that trumps everything. And the Joker was looking white. And she said, I never wanted you to play the Joker. I never wanted you to think, but I do understand that that black and white curse was extremely tough for you. I do. And I'm sorry you had to deal with that. And I thought, wow, okay, she got it. Yeah, but that was the moment when it was like, wow, you know, she really understood, because you can't have, you're talking about a city. It was Chocolate City. There was no white people on that side of town. They wouldn't make it over there. I mean, you couldn't have a bus driver, taxi cab, trash man, policeman, anything over there that was white. I mean, and so you're being told, but every time you look in the mirror, you go, I don't know. This is interesting, you know, but it was really tough to be, you know, and you're fighting all the time. And, you know, so it had its challenges, but if anybody could bring me through it, it was that woman who had endured it from the other side, white people. She was the right person for that challenge, for sure.
Amazing. What an amazing journey you've had. Incredible to be with you today. Ray, thank you so much.
Well, you're
so inspiring. Love your book, Black Sheep, truly Black Sheep. Thank you. And all the compassion and passion and purpose that you've learned through your story. Really beautiful. Congratulations to you and your daughter for all that you've accomplished.
Thank you so much, Julie. All right, girl. All right. You have a good day. Thank you so much
for watching The Julie Chan Show, where passion meets purpose.
This podcast is brought to you by WinJack Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.